This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
NASA and the NSF take to the clouds. Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for February 5th, 2010. Available every Friday on iTunes. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and we have with us Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360. Good morning, Addison.
Morning, Michael.
Before we jump into this week's news, I want to get your analyst opinion about a very important subject that's on everyone's mind, I'm sure. Who's going to win the Super Bowl?
You're right. I am an analyst, and it's going to be an entertaining game, I'll tell you that much. But boy, if I could predict that with any kind of accuracy, I could have a slightly different career. I think it's going to be a big shootout. I don't know that Breeze can outgun Manning. I'm going to take the call. Who do you like?
I like Breeze. Of course, I'm a San Diego guy, so he originally played here. So,
but I think everyone likes Breeze, and it'd be a fun story for New Orleans to win that. That would be the more entertaining outcome. I will watch with interest as always.
Yeah, so will I. I haven't put it through my supercomputer model yet, but I think New Orleans will actually win.
Well, you can probably find a cloud service for that these days, right? It's probably a web browser interface computer that'll predict the Super Bowl for you, right?
Yeah, I'm guessing there is out there. In fact, I haven't searched the internet, but I'll bet you're right. And sort of as you intimated, there's a lot of cloud news this week, as I talked about in our lead-in. We saw both NASA and the NSF sort of get into the thick of it, as it were. Let's first talk about the NSF story. I guess the NSF, National Science Foundation, Microsoft, announced this week, actually just yesterday, Thursday, a collaboration between them that would provide U.S. researchers free access to Microsoft's new cloud platform they just launched this week, Windows Azure. That's been in testing for a while and just made it generally available on Monday. And now on Thursday, they're giving it away to some researchers. I watched the webcast. It was short and sweet. And we had Dan Reed from Microsoft up there talking up the Microsoft side, and Jeanette Wing, one of the assistant directors at NSF, talking up for the National Science Foundation. Very interesting development. I mean, the NSF has been into the cloud for a while now. Obviously, they've been into the area. They've TerraGrid, obviously, and then they've moved into different cloud initiatives over the years. In fact, 2008, they started up this cluster exploratory program where they brought in Google and IBM and then HP, Intel, and Yahoo together to start testing out cloud service platforms. Now, those two platforms were based on open source Hadoop. Azure is based, obviously, Microsoft, we're talking. It's a Windows-based programming interface, and it brings in all the Windows tools, or not all of them, but some of the Windows tools and interfaces into that. So it's quite a different thing. So the NSF is sort of spreading its bets around and trying to seriously get into the cloud space and get scientists, especially those ones with, you know, the very data-intensive codes that they're using now and which are becoming more and more prevalent, onto cloud and seeing how it works out for them. So they're looking for maybe some tens of projects to get onto this program with the Microsoft platform.
Well, the interesting thing to me here is not only that it continues Microsoft's steady march through the HPC ecosystem that they'd already been starting with their HPC server platforms, but really it aligns differently with where Microsoft has seen its initial strength. A lot of the early Windows adoption, of course, has been in entry-level and mid-range commercial platforms where the affinity to the rest of the IT infrastructure is a strong benefit in addition to the performance characteristics of Windows. But here, by providing Azure to the NSF, they really align more toward the very scalable scientific codes and potentially bring some of those over. So it's an interesting play for Microsoft, not only with going big with the launch of Azure, but potentially getting more affinity toward these scientific lab codes.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And Microsoft, unlike really the other cloud providers, I mean, the big public cloud providers, especially Amazon, are able to provide sort of this more complete complete stack of software to bring in some of these codes that are more application specific. So I mean, Amazon, you're basically renting CPU cycles from sort of a bare infrastructure point of view,
right.
Whereas Azure is basically an operating system, so you can start connecting software stacks to it that cater to various application profiles, in this case scientific codes. I mean, Azure is a general purpose cloud platform, obviously, but you know, like you said, Microsoft is very interested in scientific computing, so they're able to, you know, use that as a platform for various markets now.
And, you know, you can make whatever Windows jokes you like about whether you're in HPC or not, but the fact of the matter is that Microsoft has a targeted HPC strategy, and platform providers like Amazon really don't. Amazon is a supercomputing user, but they don't have a targeted HPC SaaS strategy of any kind, and might give an advantage to Microsoft in this corner of the cloud universe.
Right, and as much as people do sort of look askance at Windows in the supercomputing community because it's the big Linux community. But for people, for scientists, individual scientists wanting to do research from their desktops, they want a Windows-based environment. And this is sort of what Azure can provide here. It provides this link between, you know, your desktop and a cloud environment and a just more transparent model than you get somewhere else. So, yeah, I mean, it's just everybody is very much into Linux on their clusters and their supercomputers. But, you know, you go to the same scientist's desktops, and most of them are on Windows.
And, you know, I've said it before, but it bears repeating that our research indicates that we'll continue to see Windows adoption in HPC. And yes, it takes a while for this kind of transition, but consider that the Unix to Linux transition took, most of a decade for that to take place. And Linux is a version of Unix, right?
Right.
So how long do you think the Linux to Windows transition should take? For that transition to take 10 years is a reasonable expectation, and we're only roughly 2 years into it now. So when we rerun our next site census survey and look at installations by year across the HPC ecosystem, we'll be launching that survey in March. We're looking forward to seeing the new data to see where the operating system penetration's changed.
Yeah, that's that's an interesting point about the transition times. And to me, when I see them doing something like this, it makes me think, you know, this might actually be an easier path of transition than what they were doing with their HPC Windows cluster environment, where you basically have to buy a cluster and then you run it under a Windows OS. I mean, here you're basically just leveraging the fact that there's lots of desktop platforms out there with Windows already in there, and then you're just building an interface somewhere else that takes advantage of that infrastructure that's already there. So in a way, this could be yet another way that, you know, Microsoft sort of leverages its Windows theme, but this might actually be an easier way for science computing to sort of get into a Windows environment.
Exactly the point. And I didn't mean to wander away from Azure and the cloud story, but I do think it's related in that this is the sort of thing that can help Microsoft get Windows adoption in the more labby kinds of environments.
Right. And this was a shrewd move on Microsoft's point of view to get this in there. I mean, there's nobody else that can really offer sort of this level of, you know, vertical sophistication for a cloud platform right now. I mean, Google and IBM have something going, and you know, we talked about HP and Yahoo with Intel, but this is just a more integrated type environment. Now, they're only giving the researchers basically 3 years, or at least at the beginning, 3 years access. So after that, presumably, you know, once you've got them hooked, then you can start paying.
That's the Microsoft model, right?
That's it.
It's free.
Yep. And actually, I think they did that with the Azure platform as well. They were giving it away for people, for early adopters wanting to trial it out, and then, you know, expecting people to sign up when it was commercially launched, which was this week. So maybe they'll expect the same thing, but this is, you know, it's a good thing. It's what Apple did. They got their infrastructure into the academic community, and people followed that. You know, they got used to it, and you know, I think Microsoft is sort of following the same sort of approach here.
Now, these aren't the only scientific applications moving into the cloud this week, right?
Right. There was another story that came out on Monday where NASA awarded basically a $600,000 deal, a small deal to a company called Parabon Computation, and it was part of NASA's Small Business Innovation Research Program. And the idea here, the company was being tasked to deliver a what I would call a cloud platform, but it was basically a services platform to let NASA scientists and engineers develop and run modeling simulation applications on a cloud or on a service-oriented cloud. Now, the cloud in this sense was going to be basically NASA's private cloud. So it was going to basically take NASA's own infrastructure, which included not just clusters or maybe supercomputing nodes, but even desktop infrastructure too, and put this platform on top of that and sort of aggregate the computation power to run a services platform. Now, Parabon's been around for a while. It's been, I think, 1999, which is more than a decade now, and they've had this product called the Frontier Grid platform, which is, you know, a typical or not so typical grid middleware platform, and it's now, you know, in its fourth iteration. And what they're going to do for this contract is put a browser layer on top of that so you can get access to it basically from anywhere, and then add other development tools into that browser so that you can have put the whole life cycle of a scientific app in that thing, and have, you know, researchers at NASA and collaborators with NASA access these projects from anywhere.
Well, and this is really taking a step toward what we've been seeing is likely the most significant business model for cloud and HPC, which is taking a step toward software as a service or SaaS for HPC in the cloud, and now doing this with these science applications through NASA to essentially let them run that as a service.
Yeah, in fact, they were calling it modeling and simulation as a service, or modeling and simulation software as a service. Yeah, they think of it more. I mean, Parabon wasn't really talking about it as a cloud thing per se. I think they sort of shied away from that terminology. But they were calling it software as a service, right. And the whole idea is to deliver this, or is to be able to deliver it as a service for the users and get everybody away from the idea of having to run things locally. And that goes back to what the NSF is trying to do. They're trying to get, you know, their users out of sort of this local model of computation that they're tied to certain infrastructure and certain operating systems and certain tool sets and get a higher level view and bring more people into it. So that's the whole idea here. And I noticed in between the two news items that we're talking about today, the idea is very similar. It's just to bring more scientists in, get a more high level view, and to make computation cheaper, basically, to make the whole operation cheaper.
Cheaper and more accessible or more efficient has been the proposed benefit of all forms of utility computing. And you know, if there's anyone who can get away with using the term cloud, it should be Parabon, provided that there's a web interface to software as a service. But you know, software as a service, utility computing, grid computing, all of these things have been around for many years. What makes it cloud is this notion of a web browser interface. And that'll be an interesting way to see software as a service or modeling and simulation as a service moving into HPC. We're seeing other companies show some interest there as well. Now, the one thing that you can do with these science and research codes is that you don't have to worry potentially so much about how they're licensed, which is going to be the biggest challenge when this hits the ISV communities, how to handle the licensing structure.
Right. That's definitely going to be one of the challenges. I mean, there's a lot of challenges, and I think, you know, we're going to see those play out as, you know, we see other vendors and other application areas move into this space.
Right. Well, this is actually another area we're looking forward to studying. We're anticipating launching a survey of the HPC ISV community just to look into their desire for SaaS, their readiness for SaaS models, how they do their licensing now, how they see themselves doing their licensing in the future, and what are the potential drivers and barriers for HPC SaaS in the cloud.
Yeah, it would be also interesting to know what people are sort of calling this thing, because, you know, lately I've been reading, you know, we hear about software as a service and cloud computing. I hear a lot of people kind of sour in the cloud semantic nowadays. And I don't know what people are even thinking out there. Some people just hate the term. We heard Larry Ellison talk about it last week. He said that you've got data centers, which are called private clouds, and you've got, you know, Google and everything outside of data centers called public cloud, so everything's a cloud. And I think it is sort of becoming this nebulous term where it refers to anything, you know, either on the internet or not on the internet, so right. So what's sort of left? So I think, you know, when you do those surveys, it'll be interesting to see how sort of people react to those different terms and see where they position themselves.
Yeah, it's so easy to forget that Grid went through this exact same thing, you know, 10 years ago. When we were early-ish in Grid adoption, you know, getting a year into it, the user community started to polarize around I'm either for Grid or I'm against Grid, or I like the term or I don't. The same thing is happening with cloud. You've got this pile of people over here who's trying to put everything in the cloud, and these people over here who say, no, that's not the point. And what that means for the vendor community is that you have to be intelligent about how you approach cloud, because if you completely immerse your messaging around cloud and say everything's a cloud, my cluster is a cloud, my interconnect is a cloud, my storage is a cloud, the application's a cloud, then you're going to lose all of these people who don't think of themselves as doing that stuff in the cloud. But if you go the other way and avoid it, and say, no, though, this stuff isn't cloud, then you lose out on the marketing hype of all the people who are looking for clouds. The intelligent ones are going to be the, you know, the stories who can talk about their products and their strategies in the context of cloud, or how they could be accessed through a cloud, or how they could be cloud enabled without that completely overwhelming their entire product messaging. You know, back in the day, Sun went whole hog on Grid and everything was a Grid and was probably too much. Other companies like SGI went the other way and nothing was a Grid, right? And so you saw both types of mistakes, and hopefully you'll find vendors who can walk the line in between.
Yeah, well, whatever it's called, I think we're going to see more of this delivery model, obviously in the enterprise, but in HPC as well, as we're seeing from the news this week. So obviously we're going to be following this quite closely, and we'll see it play out over this year and right. Years to come.
Well, and you know, and the ISV licensing scheme isn't the only challenge that's brought in here. There are also questions about how you get your digital models into the cloud. There are questions around security, and there are questions around system administration, which is maybe related to a mail item that we got this week.
Yeah, we got some interesting mail from Kevin Buderbaugh taking exception to comment from last week's program. Let me mean me here. Yeah, let me read it. Let me bring it up. Kevin says, I was very offended to hear Addison and talking about costs associated with running an existing supercomputer, saying, quote, there are no costs other than buying bananas for the sysadmin. I happen to be one of those worthless apes who works as a sysadmin in a Linux cluster environment. I also happen to be doing something I love to do. I may not be one of the really smart people, but the really smart people need the cluster I help take care of to do their job. My doing the system admin stuff means they don't have to waste their time doing it. So, what do you have to say to yourself?
This was a great email from Kevin, and thank you very much, Kevin, for sending it in. And he's been very helpful to us in our research and filling out surveys. He's been an active member of the HPC community, and I really appreciate it. And appreciate him pointing out my very unfortunate, lamentable choice of words in using the word banana. I was only commenting on the very small incremental cost of having a machine be running versus not running. And of course, that means the system admin has to be paying attention to it. My use of the word banana was only meant to be an entertaining cheap food and in no way indicate any ape-like qualities of a system administrator, which is really unfortunate because if anything, system administration has gotten considerably more complicated over the last 15 years as we've moved toward distributed architectures, Linux clusters, more complicated Linux stacks, and in fact, we hear HPC users talking about the challenges in finding qualified system administration talent. So it was a poor choice of words by me, and I appreciate Kevin calling me on it. I should have actually talked about a food that sysadmins like to eat, like pizza or something like that, and use that to pay the sysadmin. So please accept my apology to all the sysadmins out there, and we appreciate the work. I appreciate Kevin's email, and appreciate the real challenges in system administration currently and only getting more complicated in the years going forward.
Okay. Well, thanks, Kevin. Thanks for the note. And we love system admins here at HPC Wire as well. Take a system admin to lunch anytime.
Don't buy him a banana, though. Buy him whatever he wants, but not a banana.
Take him to a nice lunch. Keep those cards and letters coming. Send any complaints, encouragement, rants, whatever, to soundbite@hpcwire.com, and then we'll be reading them and maybe even reading them on the air. So we'll get back to it next week. That was interesting news this week, and I think we've got some interesting news coming up next week as well. So we got a little hint of what's going on, but
Maybe even still related to this cloud topic.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. We sort of can read the future here at times, so we'll be looking forward to that. We'll be talking again next week, Addison.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Pleasure as always.
Thanks, Addison.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.